Hello, everybody, and welcome to Showhoppers Ripley Season 1, Episode 1, A Hard Man to Find. I'm Kurt, joined by my former high school teacher, Mr. Sal.
Hello, Kurt. I'm sure you've noticed that I didn't cash your last little check.
Yes, why?
I just wanted to make sure that you noticed.
Oh, okay. That's all. I do appreciate the check, though.
No, don't go to the place. Oh, you do appreciate the check. What do you mean?
No, like, I mean,
you sent it to me.
No, I get that, but like, I was saying that from your perspective. Like, you must appreciate the check, right?
No, I don't. Not at all.
You don't?
Well, I didn't catch it.
Okay, you little crap. You want to be like that?
Yep.
You won't take my morsel handouts?
Almost reptilian.
Well, listeners, we're here covering Ripley. If you're listening to this, and you haven't seen it, it's a series out on Netflix. Check it out. I think it's all released, so you could watch it all, or at least watch episode. We'll be releasing this week to week. For reference, Mr. Sal is a fanatic fan of the books. You can't stop talking about them. I think. How often do you read the books?
Well, I'm doing a reread right now for the first time in about 20 years, so not very often. But I did love them 20 years ago.
And were they written in the 60s?
I think so. I should have my book with me, but I don't have it with me.
Well, that's fine, because we're gonna make new ground. We're gonna make new history right. When it comes to the books, right?
So I will tell you that I am rereading it right now. I have read up to the point where this episode ends, but I have not read ahead. So I
am curious as to the accuracies and inaccuracies to this, but let's save that after at least the first segment.
Okay.
Which is our ratings.
Ratings.
So I am obligated by law to guess what you rated this episode. And should I get it wrong, the punishment's severe.
I mean, this is one of the conditions of your house arrest, right?
Yes, precisely. What could you possibly have given this? So to give a little bit of knowledge behind the veil, me and Mr. Sal watched quite a few series, actually.
At least three.
Yes, at least three series, trying to choose out, you know, which one to cover next. A multitude of reasons why we picked this one over the other ones. It was a hard choice, certainly.
Yeah, this was one of the tougher ones.
This was definitely one. I thinking back to every time we've had to make hard decisions to pick a series, this might have been the hardest, if not one of the hardest.
Maybe recency bias there, but you know.
Could definitely, certainly. The thing is you did tell me the first time you watched it, you dozed off. You did tell me.
Irving.
Severance. Check it out in the back catalog. But you are a big fan of this IP, and I think you were leaning towards this series quite a bit.
I definitely was before I watched it. I was like, I was pushing it. I apologize.
The thing is, I have no idea what the book is like at all. Like, I don't even know how it's. I don't know if it's like a third person, second person, first person read. I think so. Now that you've been reading the book, getting back your old memories, you're kind of realizing, man, this book isn't as good as I thought it was. And quite frankly, this series, bit of a letdown. You gave it an 8 out of 10.
Okay.
It's not as glamorous as you had remembered it. For example, you might have remembered it in color.
All right. So I feel like you were at a bit more of a disadvantage in guessing my rating than I am for you, because you know that I have an existing relationship with this IP. It's one of my favorite book series. I mean, I really love this book series. Or I used to. I'm sure I still do. I just haven't read it in a long time. But the reread has been interesting. I have definitely enjoyed it, rereading it. It's been fun. You also know, though, that I told you that this was not my favorite of the three that we watched.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to be a conflict for you that, you know, I love the IP, but you don't know how. I mean, if this is too deviant from the books, then that might be a problem. If it's, you know, anyway, that's about you guessing.
Are the books in color? Can I ask that?
The print is in black and white.
Okay. So true to the book. That's one thing.
All right. I think for you, I mean, you had your choice of three series, and you actually really liked all three pilots. And we ultimately landed on this. So if you liked this one well enough to cover it, and by the way, I did not think you were going to like this one well enough to cover this one. I thought for sure that you were going to pick one of the other ones, especially given that I have a background in this series. But anyway, I think you got to have given this at least a 9. I know that there's always the pilot, the anti-pilot bias that you have. I think that doesn't come into play as much with limited series because they're not setting up seasons of television. They're setting up a season of television. They also, I mean, your favorite thing about pilots, when they do it, when you like a pilot, it's usually because they really zoom in on one or two characters. And boy, did they do that in this episode. So I think that you like this, definitely like this enough to give it a 9. I think you gave it a 9 out of 10.
You got me correct. I gave it a 9.
Okay.
What did you give it? I'm so curious what you gave it.
So I watched it twice. The first time I watched it, I did give it an 8. And the second time I watched it, I upped it to a 9.
Okay. So you did increase it to 9. Okay. Yeah. So when I've also watched it twice because we were watching all the other series. And I immediately fell in love with it in terms of just the pacing of it. I described it to you, but to the listeners, I think I've learned I love when shows do not tell you, but they just show you how the character feels and how.
Boy, does this really does that, doesn't it?
it takes its sweet old time doing things, just showing you how Tom does stuff. Yeah. Even from the opening sequence when he's sending a bill to the chiropractor. Oh, sorry, you're right. No, that is the actual opening sequence. Yes. Yeah. Dragging a body down the staircase, Tom con manning his way to charging people with a false collection agency. You know, he's not talking to any other character. Never once does he talk to another character about his scams. Once this entire episode, we just see him doing it.
I know.
So like that, I love that. It reminds me of especially things that we've covered. Check our back catalog here. Season 6, Better Call Saul. Mm-hmm. Better Call Saul in general does an all right job of it. Culprits on Hulu does that a good job. And if you play any other examples you could think of where it's a show don't tell.
I mean, in terms of like patient viewing, I think that we've got a lot of series that utilize that. I think that it's a tactic that I really like as well. So let me look through some of our other series and see if I can identify any here. I don't know. Maybe,
I know something that really simplify this.
Definitely not Dexter New Blood.
I was about to say, Dexter's kind of the opposite of it in a way, though. Yes. And I did like the OG Dexter series, at least the early seasons, like a lot of people do that watched them. And that one's a little different. It's like a different spin on it. You see him doing his thing, but with it, you hear his inner monologue, which you don't usually see that either, actually, right? Usually it's them talking to another character, explaining it to another character.
Yeah.
You don't hear inner dialogues as much in media.
Right.
I don't think I'm wrong on that actually at all. You seldomly hear inner dialogue to the extent of Dexter.
Yeah, Dexter is a big one. Yeah, for sure. But it was interesting because there are a lot of comps between Ripley and Dexter, like a lot of comps. And so it is like a Dexter like feel, but he's not talking to us. So and I don't remember the way the Dexter novels are written. This novel is written with a third person omniscient narrator. So the narrator,
his thoughts at all or no?
No. Okay. Well, I mean, they'll say like Tom never liked his aunt. He was always resentful because of this thing that happened or whatever. So like you kind of know what he was thinking, but not as he's, I know, I guess the narrator does kind of tell you a little bit about what he's thinking in the moment. It definitely does. Yeah. So yes, the narrator does give you insights into what Tom is thinking. But yeah, so I felt like there are four like tenets of this episode that I think are going to pervade the whole series that I really loved. And I'm excited about it because of these things. That's why I like this episode so much. And you already have talked about one of them, and that is patience. This is really patient storytelling, which requires a patient viewer, which I generally am. So I'm excited about that part of it. It's patient storytelling in that they are going to show us this happening. And then they're showing us his trip to the bank to make a deposit on behalf of this collection agency. And, you know, looking around, it's a really tense scene, even though we don't have all the information. We have enough information to understand why this is tense. And they really let it play out. You know, when he's dragging that body down the stairs right in the beginning, you know, there are close-up shots of his feet hitting the steps. And then we're going to see him climb steps later as well and go down steps again, climb again, and then go down them again and so forth. But anyway, that's that patience. Take your time in getting where you want to go is really something I love. And this series does it really well. Performance. I thought that Andrew Scott was terrific. I thought he was captivating. The summary of the Rotten Tomatoes review for the series, I think is just spectacular. I really love it. So it says that bathed in opulent black and white with a reptilian Andrew Scott holding the screen hostage. That's, I really like that, because I do think Andrew Scott does kind of hold the screen hostage in this episode. It's pretty cool what he does. And speaking of that bathing in opulent black and white, that's where one of the third tenet comes in, and that's the style of this, because the style is absolutely breathtaking. I mean, black and white is very cool to watch anyway. You can do stuff with black and white that you can't do with color, which is really weird. Like, the contrasts actually are just play very differently with black and white. There's one particular moment in this episode that I just thought was it was so cool, because they were talking about color, like, which robe do you want?
And I'm like, which one's that?
Exactly. And I think that's really cool, because they know, but we don't, and we're watching it. I like that. I think that's really neat. And then Steve Zaillian's Assumption, who's the creator, who's, by the way, the Oscar-winning writer of Schindler's List, among lots of other things, Gangs of New York. I'm missing some. I know he's written some huge movies, but Steve Zaillian's sumptuous reinterpretation of Ripley draws fresh blood from Patricia Highsmith's Insidious Social Climber. By the way, Patricia Highsmith is one of my favorite authors, not just the Ripley books. Maybe my favorite book ever is Strangers on a Train, which is one of her novels, which is just a great, great novel. Oh, my goodness. Are you familiar with the story of Strangers on a Train?
No.
Okay. This is her most famous one other than the Ripley series. It was made into, I think it was a Hitchcock movie. But anyway, it's two strangers who meet on a train. One has, I believe it's a wife who he can't stand but can't get away from. And the other one, I believe, has a mother that he can't stand but needs to get away from. And they kind of make this pact. It's a father. A parent. Anyway, it's a parent and a spouse. So, and they make this pact to commit each other's murders for them.
Oh, strangers doing the killing, yes.
Because they have no motive and they have no reason to be doing it.
Yeah,
and
okay.
So we make them harder to track down. Patricia Highsmith, every novel that I've read of hers, and I don't know if it is every novel that she's ever written, because I haven't read all of her stuff, but every one that I've ever read of hers takes a criminal, a sociopath, and makes them the main character. And not like a redeemable sociopath. Not like it's not like Marty Bird in Ozark or Dexter or Tony Soprano or Walter White, who you root for them. It's like, wow, this person's actually maybe evil. and puts them in the middle of the story. And so it's unlike most books that I've read, in that it is all from the perspective of someone who is clearly a villain. And I would not call them an anti-hero. I would not call Tom Ripley an anti-hero. Tom Ripley to me is like,
there's nothing good about him.
Yeah,
it's not like he's trying to be better. In fact, it ends with him kind of deciding something really bad.
Yes, it is. So we won't see exactly how much until we, you know, get a little deeper in. But I mean, really, it's messed up. He's messed up. And all of her lead roles are like that. So it's pretty neat. And then the other tenet of this series that I think is going to be pervasive that I've loved in this first episode is setting. Because one of the things that I love about Patricia Highsmith novels is when I read them, I feel like I'm there. She writes about Europe a lot. And I feel like I'm in these European settings that are just amazing, amazing places to be. I can see the steps of the abandoned churches that she's describing. And what they showed me in this episode, it was exactly how I would picture it in my mind. It was very cool. I loved it.
The old-timey Italian streets. Yes. Maze-like structure.
Yep, the cobblestone sidewalks and the steps that are, you know, kind of crumbling, and the balconies overlooking the beach. It's unbelievable. So it looks great. It's performed really well. Its pacing is so good. I really, really am excited about this series. I think I'm going to love it. I think you're going to like it a lot too. And Patricia Highsmith, as anything we can do to keep her works alive is exciting to me.
So feel free not to answer this if you feel it's a spoiler, but having read the beginning part of the book, would you say that this was, did it follow very closely to the book in the beginning?
Oh man, almost scene for scene.
Really?
There, you know, they made some changes. Tom has a lot more acquaintances in New York City in the book than he does here. That's probably the biggest difference. Mm-hmm. He doesn't necessarily like any of them. So, I mean, he is someone who has people in his life, but he doesn't really want people in his life.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He jumps from apartment to apartment, just kind of, couch surfing, really, I guess is the way to think of it. Like, he's got roommates because he just doesn't really have any money or anything like that. So, the apartment that he's in the book to start the novel is a place he's been only for like a month, and he has a roommate, and he doesn't really like the roommate. But anyway, so that's maybe the biggest difference. But he runs this same scam, not with a chiropractor. And the scam in the book is that he had like a very short time where he was employed by the IRS and he stole some files.
But he's still running just a scam.
It's the same scam, though. It's like he writes to these people and says, you know, you're overdue on this amount on your taxes, and you should. It's gone to collections, so send payment to this collections agency, and then, you know, he'll make the same phone call that he made in this one, where he'll be asked, you know, is there anybody else I can talk to? No, it's just me. You're talking to me. I'm here. Like, you know, so that type of thing. So that was that. I guess he doesn't, there's no private investigator in the book, but whatever. It's just a direct contact with Mr. Greenleaf. The stuff with the Greenleaf parents is very similar to what's in the book. The travel is very similar to what's in the book. Everything with Dickie and Marge is very similar. I guess Monticello? Is that what the name is? I can't remember the name of the city.
It's Alta. It's Atrani or something.
Okay, Atrani, something like that. The place where they live, Dickie and Marge, is a lot more populated in the book, but that's not a huge deal. I kind of like it better where we're just focused on
old timey.
Yeah. So I should mention that this was also made into a movie in 1999 with Matt Damon, Jude Law, and Gwyneth Paltrow. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman was in it too. But anyway, very critically acclaimed movie, got some Oscar nominations. It was fine. I didn't love the movie compared to the book because the movie really made Tom a more sympathetic character than I think he should be.
I don't like that.
he's not very sympathetic. Although they do, you know, in the book there is, like, they do tell stories about why he hates his aunt, because I mean we see that in the episode here. He writes this letter to his aunt that's kind of scathing, and well, you'll be rid of me and I of you, like that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But they do give this anecdote about how they were stuck in traffic. He lived with his aunt because his parents died in a Boston Harbor, maybe. It was something to do with drowning in boats, because he doesn't like water. And that came across a little bit here when he doesn't want to go in the ocean. Mm-hmm. When Dickie and Marge go in, he does not like water, and a lot of it's because his parents died in water. Anyway, he lived with his aunt, and his aunt was stuck in traffic, and it was very hot, and the traffic wasn't moving. So she sent him to run and fill water at a filling station.
Okay.
Fill up water bottles or whatever, and the traffic started to move and she wouldn't stop. It was just inching forward and he kept like chasing the car and she kept, you know, yelling at him to hurry up. And it was pretty traumatic for him. So he does hate his aunt, but I guess we get that anecdote that kind of makes you understand why he doesn't like his aunt in the book that we don't get here. But they did change the letter enough to make you understand he does not like his aunt.
I wonder if we'll see more about his aunt later or anything in the series.
I don't know.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay then. Well, I don't know if I'm glad or upset on that information. I guess good to know. Good to know. I know you like the book and this is followed true to form to the book. So
it really is. Like the last chapter that I read is literally him in this hotel room looking out the window and seeing Dickie and Marge get on the sailboat. Like it's really, you know, down to the point where he notices that Dickie has two Picassos in his house. Like it's very detailed like that. There's some extra stuff that I'll talk about when it comes up here, but yeah, it's very cool.
All right. Well, you know, if it's so cool and there's a lot of memorable things from the book that appear or don't appear in the series, I'm curious to what your favorite scene is.
Favorite scenes.
Man, I really don't know what your favorite scene is. I mean,
this was tough. This was tough.
Yeah, this is tough in kind of like the, I guess the middling way. I like the episode as a whole, but it's hard for me to outline any specific scenes.
Yeah.
Really above the rest.
I agree.
It's not like when it's so this problem can, I guess, come up in three ways. One, the whole episode is very mediocre, so just nothing pops out to me. Number two, this kind of instance, which is just the episode tells a very good story, but again, no scene in particular pops out to me.
I mean, you know, there are a lot of scenes here. I had like over 20 scenes, so that's kind of a lot.
But I and maybe you feel differently, but I'll say right off the bat, nothing here really popped out to me as like a, you know, this.
No, I agree 100%.
And then there's number three where you get this problem, but that's because so many scenes are so good and you don't know what to pick between. Yep. That if you know, oh. No, but this is like in category number two here, which is just hard to pick a scene, not because they're all just so bad or all because they're all so great. Just, I mean, it tells a good story in the episode and I don't know which one you pick. So I'm trying to think as since you were reading the books, what's something that might have really like excited you and been like, ooh, I can't believe it, or I'm so excited that they depicted this. I will go with Tom's I think what it must be, it's the water or the, I bet you it is when they're all having dinner, Tom, Dickie, Marge, and I if you'll count this before they no actually so ooh, for their dinner scene, do you count them going out into the terrace then having dinner all as one scene, or do you cut it when it cuts in time to them going and having dinner? You know what I'm referring to?
I do, and I counted it as him and when it's just him and Marge as one scene, and then once Dickie gets involved, it's a different scene.
Okay, so I'll say once Dickie gets involved, and then they have dinner.
Okay, all right.
That's your favorite scene.
All right, sounds good. I think that your favorite scene, I kind of had it pegged from the time I saw it, and I didn't see anything that caused me to deviate from it, and I haven't heard anything that caused me to deviate from it.
I'm just letting you know.
Probably not, but what I had written originally, and I'm going to stick with it, is when Tom goes into the post office and tries to get out of the postal worker where Dickie lives and leaves his luggage there, and that there's obviously a language barrier, but that's where I think your favorite scene lies.
Sue.
Yeah, right. Sue. Yeah.
No, that is not my favorite scene. Did I get you right?
No, but I do want to mention something about that scene that you picked for me, the lunch scene. This is one place where it also deviates from the book a bit, because in the book, Tom is very open about talking about Dickie's parents. Oh, yeah, I met your father, and he showed me the shipyard, and he never says they want you to come home. He just says, I met your mother, and, she's doing better. She still gets tired easily and stuff like that. So he's open about talking about it, and he regrets it later. He regrets that he was so open about talking about it. So now that they haven't had him talk about it yet, I wonder if that changes things going forward. But that was not my favorite scene.
Okay, so, well, my favorite scene, which I didn't think you would peg, but it kind of defied expectations to me, so that's why I really liked the scene. I picked my favorite scene, and you can tell me that you feel that this is unfair, but when he arrives in Italy and gets his currency, the local currency, and he kind of gets scammed, or at least taken advantage of by the locals, like someone grabs his bags, he goes in with a cab, dropped off at a bus station. Spends the night there, and then eventually, and I end it once he gets off the bus at this place in Italy.
Yeah,
okay? that whole travel sequence.
Yeah,
that was my favorite scene.
I think that's fine, and that is a very cool. I love that sequence too. It's really good.
Kind of the biggest reason why is, first of all, him getting seemingly conned is, it's I guess justice in a way, right? He has not much he can do about it, but it's also. Right beforehand, he's on the Orient Express. He's writing that letter to his aunt.
Yeah.
Basically, he's feeling like the top of the world, right? When he takes this stuff. So, like, oh, I'm going to Italy. I got to travel. Like, this is going to be great. And then it's like a big reality check, because henceforward, he is so uncomfortable for the rest of the episode.
Oh, you're
all throughout,
right?
Like, well, even when he gets to that nice little place out in Italy, he's walking all these steps, traveling around, trying to get Dickie. It's like actual work. You know, he's struggling to talk to the hotel clerk. He has a language barrier. This isn't like he all panned it out to be, especially when he has to spend that night out at the bus stop, and it's kind of scary. Like, it gets so uncomfortable for him. So that's why it's my favorite scene. It kind of subverted my expectations in a good way. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. It's interesting that you say that he got scammed, because I don't think he got scammed. I think he got what he needed, that he needed to get to that bus stop. He needed to get on that bus. But he got pushed into it.
That's what I mean. He got kind of muscled. Like, he got taken advantage of. Like, he just Someone grabbed his, things, took him over there. He had to tip him, taken by the cab or the taxi driver. Can't even communicate with him. Who knows how the fare is going. Buffed out at the bus stop.
Let me tell you, I don't want to stereotype, but I have been to Italy and I have had that experience.
It's a really common experience for tourists in a lot of areas where they just kind of feel they get whisked away. You know, the cab drivers or like the people that help out tourists are usually a lot more aggressive, because they know that you're not going to see them again. It's a little different. If you're in a small town that's a non-touristy area, the people try to build a lot more repertoire, because you'll probably be a repeat person. But if it's a high volume, constantly new people coming, they don't. A lot less people care about building repertoire. They're never going to see you again.
No, you're right. It's really, you're exactly right. And I like I said, I have been in that situation, but it was interesting to see that, especially this guy who's always trying to pull the wool over other people's eyes. Is really put back on his heels here. So. Yeah, I like, and I loved the part of that scene where he's on the bus and looking over the edge.
The clip.
Like that. So, and that's what I mean about the style of this, the style and the settings. Like, that's a cool stylistic shot of him on this bus looking over the cliff, and the setting too. Like, that we've seen that setting, a similar setting in the White Lotus season 2, because that's set in Sicily. But I remember the scene on the Vespa.
That's what I'm thinking of too.
Yes, yes. Yes, yes. Yeah. But it was cool because he was on that side of the bus that could see that. Had he been on the other side of the bus, he wouldn't probably have even seen it. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, yeah, it's a cool scene. I like it. That's a good pick.
What did you go with?
I went with his time on the Orient Express. So his letter to his aunt. I love this.
Tom at the top here.
Tom at the top. That's right. So I love this because it really clues us in, first of all, to his relationship with his aunt, obviously, which is not good. He hates his aunt. And I talked about the anecdote in the book about the stuck in traffic bit. His aunt is kind of notoriously sends him these like really weird small amounts of checks, like $6.44 or $12.72 or whatever, like really kind of just slap in the face amounts that are only sent so that she has an excuse to write and, you know, get her digs in. You know what I mean? It was interesting that they juxtaposed that with her at the dentist office. I don't know where that came from. I don't know where they came up with that. That's not, at least not in the Orient Express scene in the book. Maybe it's in a future chapter of the book that I'm not remembering. But I like to think that that is him thinking about his aunt. And because he doesn't like her, he's putting her in his thoughts in the most unpleasant situation he can put her in.
That's a dentist's fair.
That's what I like to think. Now, the other reason I really like this scene is because it clues us into the idea that he is not just here to do this job. He is here to change his life. Like he says, you're rid of me and I of you. Like as much as he hates those $6.44 checks, he's not getting that much more from the people he's scamming, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to be done with all that and move on to this thing. I think that they're cluing us in here to the idea that he doesn't have any intention of going back.
He's on to bigger and better.
Yeah. And I don't think he knows here that he's going to be looking in the mirror at the end of this episode saying, I'm Dickie Greenleaf. I don't think he knows that, mm-hmm. but I think that he knows he's going to do what he needs to do to make sure that he's set up someplace else doing something that he likes better than what he was doing in New York. And he's not. It's a new chapter of his life.
That's fair. No, so. Yeah, the Orient Express is really cool. The highs and the lows. That's what we picked mm-hmm. here for the yeah. favorite scenes.
Very, very true. Very true.
All right. Oh, maybe we'll get two different things out of this series. Who knows?
Maybe.
Like, what's it? You know what, actually?
Mm-hmm. Oh. No, I love your favorite scene though. I think it's great.
I like your favorite scene too.
Yeah, it's a great juxtaposition.
Yeah,
back to back. Yeah,
it definitely is. I the way my scene follows yours, But if we take two different things away from the series, it might be similar to Last of Us season 1 that we covered, where I've disagreed on quite a few episodes. Yeah, both like the series.
Yeah,
check that out in the back catalog, mm-hmm. listener. But okay, well, if that's our favorite scene, let's check out the Magic Mind moment.
Ooh.
The Magic Mind moment.
Mr. Sal, I'll concede the floor to you. What do you think is a Magic Mind moment here? Who in this, who or at what time could someone have used a Magic Mind?
Yeah, so Magic Mind, we love Magic Mind. We drink Magic Mind different times of the day. I drink mine right before lunch to help combat that afternoon grog. It's a focus shot, right? It's not an injection, but like a drink shot.
Yeah, so, productivity shot.
Yeah, a productivity shot, yeah. So, you know, it's designed to give you energy, boost your immune system, help you focus, be more productive. And I think that the person that could use that in this episode is Tom. Because he's got to climb a lot of stairs.
A lot of physical activity.
Yes. So we've got this scene where the post officer tells him, you know, Dickie lives right up that hill. You know, just go up, 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 up. That's what su means. So in Italian. So he climbs up the stairs all the way up, and they do a really great job of showing how grueling that is on all the way up. And he gets to the top only to realize he's got to go back down again because Dickie's not up there. He's down at the beach. So he goes back down and he hangs out with Dickie at the beach a little bit. And then he's got to go back up to have lunch with Dickie. And then he comes back down to get his bags. And then he's got to go back up to the hotel and he's gassed. He has no energy. He is like ready to collapse. Like, that's a person who could use some magic mind for energy, for focus, for productivity. I think Tom definitely could use it.
He's certainly running on E at that moment. He definitely, when he has to take a break and they turn him back to, you all right? And I do enjoy magic mind. I like to put it in with my coffee. Helps that energy last longer throughout the day. Don't get that crash if I just have caffeine throughout the day. So I think I would agree, Tom. For the most part, this episode follows Tom. But I think he could have used it during lunch with Marge and Dickie.
Okay.
More specifically, I guess their hangout in general. Yep. This is a time where his mind has to be sharp, right? Yep. Arguably, maybe also creative. Magic mind can help with all of this, especially if you're trying to pull the con of a lifetime. Okay. And for example, so you referenced how, I guess, in the book, he does reveal how he talked to his father and family, Dickie's father and family at the shipyard. Yep. Here he doesn't, but he almost slips up when he talks about his painting. Maybe with some magic mind in him, right? That could have maybe not happened. Maybe he would have been more prepared.
Show a lack of focus.
Right. And really, to be quite frank, and maybe you disagree, it seemed like a pretty dry conversation.
It was kind of
awkward. Like when it all ends, Dickie bears him goodbye. It's just kind of all right, goodbye.
And I think that's where they will line up with the book a bit here, in that like he has regrets about the conversation. Like in the book, he says, I should have been more humorous. And I think he feels that here too. Like, he's not sure how this is going with Dickie right off the bat. And with more focus from magic mind, he might have been.
It also might have been stress, right? It's hard to keep things loose when you're stressed. And magic mind can help with stress. It can be a stress reliever. Right. So please, listeners, give it a try. magicmind.com/KNS20. You'll get 20% off on your order and up to 56% off on your first subscription if you go to that link, or if you use our promo code KNS20. That'll be in the show notes below. And thank you to Magic Mind for supporting the podcast.
Who said it?
The hit, I don't know why I always say the hit game show, sweeping the nation. But it really is.
The
sensation of the nation of the Italian peninsula. Who said it? Coming to you live via your podcast feed. Mr. Sal. It is not live, sadly. There are three quotes I have, all right? And your objective is I will give you the quote. You will have to guess whom said it, to whomst, and whom where.
Whomst.
AKA the scene. Yep. Hopefully that was all proper. Right. Feel free to correct me. If you'd like to correct me, showuperspodcast@gmail.com. Quote number one.
Okay.
How do you do?
How do you do? Your quotes are ridiculous. All right. How do you do? Everybody could have said this to Tom or Tom to everybody.
Really? I thought this was kind of jarring. All right. Okay.
You thought it was jarring.
I thought it was jarring. I went,
How do you do?
Maybe it's because I never hear anyone say this. I heard that one.
Quick story about one of my students. I'm a high school science teacher. I think, Kurt may have mentioned that at the beginning here. One of my students this year, she was wearing like a fedora, and she was getting a very big kick out of wearing this fedora. She does not normally wear a fedora. And I looked at her when she came in, and she tipped her hat and said, "How do you do, Mr. Salamone?" So I was like, oh my goodness. That's really funny.
So, exactly. See, memorable.
Yeah, it is. Well, when she said it with the fedora, yes. So I'm guessing this is not somebody who is Italian saying, how do you do? It could be if it was jarring to you, I don't think it was Tom. I don't think it would be Dickie or Marge. So I'm thinking this is somebody back in New York saying, how do you do to Tom, perhaps? Who did he even interact with in New York or anywhere other than Dickie and Marge in the post office guy? I guess I'm thinking it's either Mr. Greenleaf or Mrs. Greenleaf. Maybe it's the private investigator. I'll go with, I don't remember his name though, but I'll go with the private investigator to Tom in the bar.
Ooh, I'm going to have to give you a third of a point there, Mr. Sal.
What?
It was said to Tom, but it wasn't the right scene and it wasn't the right person. It was, in fact, in Italy on the beach by Marge.
Dickie, that's Dickie, jarring to you?
I was just hearing the phrase was. I was like, oh, old timey. Yeah, this just takes place in the 60s.
Yeah, it does. Unbelievable. This is precise. I mean, I think a third of a point is generous there, but okay.
You have a third of a point. What a yes.
Ridiculous quote.
How do you do, Mr. Sal? How do you do? Tom is walking along the beach and he finds Dickie and Marge laying there relaxing. So he kind of goes, oh, you know, he kind of pretends like he's ran into Dickie. He recognizes him from, what did he say, Bomb Delancey's place. And it's kind of awkward. Dickie doesn't remember him. Marge hits him with the, how do you do? And they agree to go for a swim. But I took this as that he did not know how to swim. Maybe he doesn't, but it's a fear of swimming. Well, here's what I noted, though. This will be important later because it appears that Dickie does like to swim, though.
So. Yeah, Tom appears terrified of the water here, and the character in the book is unimpressed. I'm sorry. It does not like water. I don't know if I'd say that he's scared of water, but he does not like water.
Okay.
I think it's a couple other important things to note from here is that Dickie does not seem to remember him.
No, not in the slightest.
Whatever meeting they had in New York, wherever they met, it was not very significant to Dickie, at least. And maybe not even to Tom, because when Tom first hears it, mm-hmm. he's like, yeah, I don't know who that is. So it was not a very substantial meeting. It's not like they were best friends or anything like that. So I think Mr. Greenleaf, what's his name? I forget his name. Anyway, he's grasping at straws here by asking Tom to go and try to coax Dickie back. Another thing that I want to point out about this scene is the bathing suit is in the book as well, and it's even skimpier in the book than it is.
Oh, the Speedo?
But he's very uncomfortable with it, obviously. But one of the things that I really liked in this series, in the show here, in the episode, is he walks out in this Speedo bathing suit and his like dress shoes. And I was like, it's ridiculous. He's wearing dress shoes. So in the book, he steps out onto the pavement on the cobblestone barefoot because he's wearing a bathing suit, right? And it's like incredibly hot. His feet mm-hmm. can't handle it. So he tries to get sandals in addition to the bathing suit. They don't sell sandals. So instead of going barefoot, like he probably would do on the beach, he's wearing his shoes because it's so hot.
Oh, so it's a good addition to detail.
Yeah, it was really cool.
All right.
Yeah, because I saw him wearing the shoes, and I was like, that's weird that he's wearing his shoes. But that's why. It's just very, very hot. His feet did not like the heat of the sand and the cobblestone.
Staying true to form, and you, a third of a point.
Oh, boy.
Maybe you could do better in quotes.
Folks, if you think that was an unfair quote, like I think that was an unfair quote, showhopperspodcast@gmail.com. Let Kurt have it.
Well, maybe we'll see how you feel about quote two.
Okay.
Will you think about it?
That is, I believe that's Mr. Greenleaf to Tom after he propositions him to go to Italy to get Dickie back.
In what scene?
In the shipyard.
From whom?
From whom? From Mr. Greenleaf to Tom.
To whomst?
To Tom. I feel like I've said this three times. Okay. All right.
You are correct. Yes, this is the shipyard scene.
Okay.
I mean, this is an interesting scene. Mr. Greenleaf, really, the Greenleaf parents seem like a nice lot. I don't know how they treat their son, but they seem to care a lot about him. Mr. Greenleaf has sent for Tom because apparently, in some way, he knows Dickie, kind of, maybe. And he's not coming home from Italy. He's avoiding his responsibilities. He's got this trust fund money. You know, he doesn't really care too much. They probably shouldn't have given it to him. As far as they know, he just sits on the beach all day, paints all day, hangs out with whomever she is to him. And, you know, they would like it back in the States. So Tom claims that right now he works for insurance accounting, and Mr. Greenleaf is willing to hire him, give him a salary, pay for his expenses to go out and talk to Dickie and get him back to the States.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. An opportunity knocks.
You know, it's interesting too. This is in the books, he kind of like, he loves making up stuff.
So, like a pathological liar.
Yeah. So he loves making stuff up. So he comes up with, you know, whatever story he feels like in the moment about what his job is or what happened to his parents or where he went to college. Like, so it is very interesting to hear that. I will say Mr. Greenleaf says in this scene that none of Dickie's other friends will even like entertain the notion of doing this. Mm-hmm. So he's very grateful to Tom for doing this. I mean, you got to believe that if Tom, who doesn't even remember Dickie and Dickie doesn't remember Tom, is being asked to do this, he's already tried this with everybody else.
He's exhausted all their possibilities.
Yeah, exactly. So,
or at least most other.
Yeah, exactly. Well, important to note, I think.
That's fair. Very fair. So that is 1 1/3 out of 2.
Okay.
Not better than 50%.
Yeah, I guess.
But not passing yet. The last quote. You can talk to me. I think that's all you need from it.
Yeah, I actually already said this.
So. I know you did.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he's on the phone with I don't think I wrote down the guy's name. You're gonna make me say his name.
That might be a third of the point so lost.
He's on the payphone in like the first floor of his apartment building, right outside the bathroom while the guy's like doing laundry in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And he calls this guy Mr. whatever his name is, and I'm gonna stall and just play it back so that I can figure out what his name is. Well, or you can stop me from it. Doing that.
You can't be playing back during Who Said It. I think that's just intrinsically cheating.
Well, but I know which scene it is and who says it. So,
but you don't know whom he said it to. Yeah.
I do. Mr. I just Reddington. Don't know the guy's name. Mr. Reddington. Yeah, see, Mr. Reddington. You didn't give me a chance. I was about to come up with it. It was on the tip of my tongue. So, anyway, Mr. Reddington, he says, you know, Mr. Reddington is kind of irate about this. I sent that check in. I was, is there anybody I can talk to? And he says, well, you can talk to me. You're talking to me. Which I think is great. One of the things that comes up during that conversation in the book is that the guy wants to come in and to the office to have a face-to-face conversation.
Yeah.
And Tom faces that a lot, that these people want to come into the office. He says, well, I mean, you can, but I have all your files right here in front of me. So I could save you the trip by just talking to me right now, because you're just going to get all the same information from whoever you come talk to. So, and it usually works that people just talk to him instead.
It becomes a confidence game. Yeah.
Yes.
Confidence man. Maybe check out Lost.
Mm.
We covered that entire series.
Yes. That was a lot. That was worth it. It was good.
Six seasons. I mean, whole. Well, Mr. Sal, I'll give you 2/3 credit for that. That makes you 2 out of 3. You thought that a third was a generous, and I was strict on this.
Yeah, okay.
We can say whatever. We meet in the middle. Isn't that compromise?
Yeah, I guess so. We're both except unhappy. I don't think you're unhappy. I think I'm more unhappy than you.
All right, I'll give you 2.5 points.
A sixth of a point.
No, you get 2.5 points out of 3.
Ooh, all right. 2.5 points.
Now, how do you feel?
That I feel pretty good about, I think.
I feel pretty upset about that.
It's 2.5. Like, I don't know where I got that other half from.
Me either. That's kind of a disproportionate amount. That's kind of unfair to me. I'm upset about that.
Cool. This
compromise did not work out.
This is a good compromise.
When the compromise works properly. Well, Mr. Sal, let's go to our new segment debuting here on Ripley. Let's look at the let's reevaluate the title here for the episode.
Titles transform.
That's cool. I like that intro.
I like that intro a lot.
Title transformation. Where?
But so, we got a good producer on this podcast. I'll tell you.
Yes, big thanks to our producer.
What's our producer's name?
Mr. Sal.
It's me.
I'll take some credit for producing.
I was gonna make up somebody.
We could have named like a third party that does it.
Yeah, Carmen. Good job, Carmen.
Yeah, always doing good work there. The podcast work. That's all in Carmen, editing, producing, putting together all the things. Yeah, Carmen's on the soundboard. So the total transformation. So normally, if you listen to show operas before, well, in our recaps, we'll talk about the titles, best titles, worst titles. We're going to drop that in the recap because we would like to talk about the titles during the episode. We can't really do that usually because talking about the titles makes the recap worse when we try to guess each other's titles. So we're just going to drop it from the recap. We can do it here. But not only are we going to perhaps discuss the title, but more importantly, we're going to rename it to a title that, you know, probably is better. I'm hoping we're aiming for. I thought I'd made a better title.
I don't know. I actually really like this title
I agree. Actually, this is a pretty good title because who says it? The PI says it to Tom. And really, Tom kind of experiences this when he goes looking for Dickie in a way.
Yeah,
in a microcosm. But it's I think this title is pretty good for the pilot episode. But I think my title's better.
Really?
I like my title a lot.
That's confidence. I like mine a lot too.
Okay, whose do you think is better?
What if we have the same title?
There's no way. I'll tell you now, I don't think you'll like my title. I think you'll say it's too tacky.
Okay.
And perhaps illegal.
I think you're going to love my title.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Are you going to say all in? Don't say all in.
No, I'm allowed that once a season, though. And that is
season, we get all in. Yes,
once a season, we can use the famous Ozark and other series, not just Ozark. It started with Ozark. Title of All In, because it's a very applicable. I mean, you can apply to this one.
You can apply to pretty much every episode we've ever covered.
You could you should call it, you know, All In's Law or something. It's just, you know, any episode title could be All In. Now, I'll tell you right up front. Again, I don't know if you're allowed to make this the title. I think you could. I don't think Disney will sue.
Oh.
A New Hope, and here's why. Okay, so you think of Star Wars, A New Hope, Episode 4. It's the Sith, the Empire have taken over, and this is they've been in charge for a while now, but the Rise of Skywalker. There's a New Hope in the galaxy now that, you know, Luke can rise and perhaps stop the Empire. Right, so it's kind of the bad guys are on top, and perhaps the good guys can come back. This is A New Hope when you look at Tom's perspective, where he's down on his luck. Things are going bad for him.
The shower drain's backing up.
Well, he has a bad dream, right? Yeah. We can talk about dreams some other time, but we don't like dreams. Was that a dream or was that real? That might have been
I don't know, actually.
You're right. You know, I took it as a dream, but it very much could have been real, and they just cut Tim being in bed. There's him having to pull these kind of microcosms of cons, having to escape the bank, ditching this collection agency. It looks like he's being followed. Is it the IRS agent? They left a card for him. He's a terrible living situation, terrible relationship with his aunt. And now he has a new hope, the chance to travel, the Orient Express. He gets to go to Italy. And you know what? And it gets a bit of a downstroke again, right? Once he gets to Italy, these hardships. But it ends with potential, a new hope. Maybe he can be Dickie Greenleaf. Boom.
Maybe.
A new hope.
Oh. All right.
That's my title. What do you think?
It's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. I like a hard Ripley. Man to find more.
Season 1, episode 1, A New Hope. I love it.
Okay. All right. I give you credit. It's creative. I like your explanation. I don't think I like it as much as A Hard Man to Find, but...
No, that's such a simplistic one compared to A New Hope.
Okay. All right. So, my title, I think mm-hmm. you're going to like my title, because you love in a title when you can, when it helps you remember what happened in the episode. That's one thing you love about a title. One thing I love about a title is when it is thematic for the whole season. So, it represents the theme of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing you like about a title is when a title is in another language and you learn something from the title.
Especially like Latin or something, but yeah.
My title meets all three conditions.
Whoa. Ready? Okay.
My title, Ripley, Season 1, Episode 1, Su.
Hmm.
That's a good one. I'm telling you. Su. This, of course, is what the postal worker says to Tom when he's describing where Dickie lives. How to get there. You go up. Okay. That is the trajectory that Tom wants his life to go. That's the trajectory that the series is kind of about. Mm-hmm. In fact, if we read that description, the summary of the critic consensus on Rotten Tomatoes, they describe Tom as Patricia Highsmith's insidious social climber. Sue.
And it's hard to climb up.
Like, it is.
It's hard.
Yeah. So
I like the title. That is a good title. I like that title.
That's a good one.
I like it.
I still like A Hard Man to Find more than mine, even. So. Really?
Yeah, I think I like both of ours more than A Hard Man to Find.
Really? Wow.
I think A Hard Man to Find is like, whatever, actually. It's a good title. I like Su more. I like A New Hope more. I like the reference to Star Wars, but like in a reverse way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't this person having New Hope.
That's true. That's true. It's like giving Darth Maul New Hope.
Yes, something. Exactly. Yeah.
That's interesting. So I will say that I really like this scene that I'm talking about too, where he's trying to communicate with the post office worker. And it seems like the post office worker kind of knows what he's talking about, but he doesn't really know what the post office postmaster's talking about. But, you know, he leaves his bags there, which is funny because if he had taken his bags with him, it probably would have been a little easier, at least the second time.
Yeah. Yeah. So he didn't have to come back, take him, go back up.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was probably the most humorous part of this episode was that stuff with the postmaster.
Oh, but,
yeah. And then it is pretty hilarious when he asks for the Hotel Miramari after he's already been up the stairs twice. Now he's back down to get his luggage. He asks the postmaster, where's the Hotel Miramari? Su. It's really funny. Anyway, and it's representative of the climb that he's trying to make. So
I'd also like to point out that my title's also thematic.
Oh yeah, no, you're right, I guess, you know, for the episode.
Maybe for him in general, I don't know where the series theme will go. But.
I'd be surprised if it goes there.
Who knows? You know, actually, but I don't. And maybe some of the viewers don't. Maybe it's A New Hope.
All right.
Well, oh yeah. All right. I'll ask you this, Mr. Sell. Is there anything else you'd like to recap in the episode?
So there's at least one thing that I think of, and that is the pen. Did you notice the pen?
I did. So just to explain this to the listeners real quick. When before he goes out onto the before he talks to Marge and he's looking, he sees a Picasso painting. He sees a camera. He sees a nice pen.
Yep.
And then later, once he gets to the hotel, at the very last scene sequence, mm-hmm. he signs into the hotel with his very nice pen. The clerk even says that.
Yeah, exactly. The clerk called attention to it. It is the same pen. I did go back and look it is exactly the same pen. So seems like Tom is kind of commandeering some of Dickie's stuff here.
A little bit of a kleptomaniac.
Yeah.
We see.
I also wanted to talk about the Brooks Brothers scene where he picks out the robe, because I think that was a little confusing in the episode, and I think I can shed some light on it based on what's in the book. Mm-hmm. What he was intending to do there, he was supposed to be bringing clothes to Dickie.
Yes.
So Mrs. Greenleaf had ordered some clothes from Brooks Brothers for Tom to take and pick up and bring to Dickie. So when he picks out the maroon robe or the burgundy robe, as the case may be, he's picking it out. The clerk at least thinks he's picking it out for Dickie.
All right. But really, he's doing it for himself.
We don't know that.
Oh, of course. Yes. My
but we have not seen him give that stuff to Dickie yet.
He hasn't even.
I will say that.
Said that he's met his parents yet.
That's right. That's right. So anyway, so that's some interesting stuff. We got to talk about the end, though. The very last bit that we see.
You're right. Actually, we haven't even really spoken about how he basically in the end, right? He looks out the sailboat. There's Dickie, there's Marge, they get on the sail, they get taken to the sailboat. He goes in the mirror and he starts practicing his lines. Hey, yeah. I'm Dickie Greenleaf. Not Tom Ripley.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. Yeah, Dickie Greenleaf. Yeah, nice to meet you too. Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah, dude, that is so creepy. I like that. I like that. Just that show don't tell. I mean, in a way, I guess you can tell because he speaks out loud. But, you know, it all, like, makes sense. He's going to the mirror practicing his lines.
Yep. Now, I will say this. To steal somebody's identity now, I mean, you're really stealing a virtual identity, right?
Like, yeah. People will just use your credit card online.
Like, right. Not hard to do and not easy to combat. And also not full, like... Nobody's coming into my house and going to convince my wife and kids that they are me, as far as I can. I don't think. Yeah,
give me a try.
But think about in 1961 what it would take for Tom to become Dickie Greenleaf.
That's what I'm wondering right now.
Yeah.
I feel like Marge is a bit of an issue.
You do.
Well, I feel like that, but maybe you got to like pay her off. Like, how do you? You can't just become Dickie Greenleaf.
What did you make of Marge in this episode? Because I thought that this is Elle Fanning, and I thought this was an interesting take on Marge in this episode.
I don't know. I don't think I really. She seemed to me suspicious of She seemed suspicious.
She does, right? I picked up that.
So her suspicion made me think. Does she know this game in a way? Like, she's also kind of conning Dickie. And so, like, she has her own angle she's working. So maybe it might become mutually beneficial. When she, on the terrace at some point, points out... First of all, she wants to go meet with him alone on the terrace. She points out that she has a house somewhere, which to me seems like an unnecessary detail. Almost as though, I don't need this or anything. I got my own house over there. I suspect that, and I have no certainty, but she's running some sort of con on. She's trying to get the wool over Dickie's eyes in some way, or is trying to take advantage of him in some way, and and can kind of sense this is what what Tom is also doing.
Gotcha.
So maybe Tom can reason with her if he tries to take over Dickie's life. I'm not quite sure, but. In one way or another, she will pose a problem that Tom will have to solve in some way. I'm interested to see how he would do that.
All right. And now, what do you think of this mission that he's supposed to be on to get Dickie to come home? Do you think he actually is going to try to do that? Do you think he's going to punt it? Do you think he's going to try?
Okay. No, I think he's going to punt it.
Okay. So I will tell you in the book, if you want to know, like in these early chapters. He does. There is narration about his desire to succeed in this. That all comes before he actually meets Dickie.
Okay, so he's like, I really want to bring him home and show proud, like almost as though there's a character redemption arc here. Like he's been given a job, and he's going to do this job, actually, right? He's not going to just, you know, con Mr. Greenleaf here. He's gonna try and get Dickie back home.
He wants Mr. Greenleaf to feel like he's succeeded in the mission. Okay. That's before he meets Dickie. In this particular scene in the book, he does not look in the mirror and say, yeah, Dickie Greenleaf, yeah, nice to meet you too. He does not do that in the book, okay? But he does say that he wishes he had been more humorous and he wants nothing more than to get Dickie to like him. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
For whatever all that's worth, there that is.
Well, I'm very interested in watching the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to. But before we can really get into that can of worms, let's check the time.
All right. Oh, it's TV time.
Oh, yeah. Ain't no time like a TV time. TV Time, listener, if you are not aware, is an app that you can use to help organize and rate and I guess comment on your TV viewing experience. It breaks it down episode to episode, and you can go in. It could also tell you when episodes of series, or I guess seasons of series, are dropping. We here at Show Hoppers use TV Time as a segment just to, we have no affiliation with TV Time whatsoever, actually.
No.
Mr. Sal uses the app. I don't, but I use it vicariously through him. So I would say I'm a big TV Time app user. I would argue that in a way. Okay. I all but input use the app. So that's got to be worth something. But in the app, at least what we use it for is, you can rank the episode 1 through 5, you can also choose your favorite character for the episode, and I guess Mr. Sal will shortly tell us what those characters are for this. And there's other things that we don't use, like how the episode made you feel, which has a bunch of emotions that are kind of not as fun to guess. So we're going to try to guess each other's and what the users of TV Time put in for inputs, specifically favorite character, or the ranking of the episode. I think the people gave it a 5, though.
So yeah, this is out of 5, and I think they gave it a, well, I don't know. I guess if you're in here, this is the first episode. I'm going to say they gave it a 4.
Okay, and what was it?
It was a 5. 48% said 5. So you're right.
What percent said 4?
36%.
Ooh, killed you.
I guess.
It wasn't even close. Yeah, that's all relative.
Okay, yes, it is. It definitely is. Now, as for favorite characters, so that you have an opportunity to vote for your favorite character, and it'll tell you what percentage of TV Time users voted also for that character, and all the characters for that matter. So in this, the votable characters, as of right now, and I suspect this will change as the series goes on, we've had this happen a lot, where it starts out, you have a full palette of people you can vote for, and by the end of it, you have, I'm thinking The Last of Us. When we watched The Last of Us, you had all these characters you could vote for in the pilot, and they all kind of disappeared, and all you had to vote for in the end were the two main characters. So, which was disappointing, because there were episodes where I definitely would have voted for other characters. But in this series right now, who I can vote for, and who you through me can vote for, Kurt, is the three mains, so Tom, Dickie, and Marge. And Mr. and Mrs. Greenleaf. And then also 4 characters who we have not met yet. Freddy and Inspector. I don't remember the inspector's last name. Senora. And I don't know Senora's last name. And Reeves. So those are your choices. So there's 4 people that weren't even in this episode. And then Dickie's parents, Dickie himself, Tom and Marge.
I think you said... Did you say Reeves? Or did you say... I think you said Tom.
I think the people said Tom. Yeah, I do too. I think you said Tom. The people said Tom. I'd be shocked.
Spot on.
I'm going to be shocked if anybody said anything other than Tom. 97% of the people said 97 Tom.
97 only.
Yeah, 3% of the people said Marge. That's the Zoomer crew. That's the Elle Fanning fan club.
Where is she known from?
Well, you know what? I don't know. But she is Dakota Fanning's sister, who has had probably a more successful adult acting career than Dakota Fanning, although Dakota Fanning had the more successful childhood career. And I don't even know what they're known for. I have no idea. But I'll look it up quick because I feel bad because Elle Fanning did a fine job in this episode. I want to give her credit and not just say that it's Zoomers voting for her.
Typical Zoomers just voting up someone that's not the main character that should be winning it. Pish posh.
What she's probably most known for, I think, is Maleficent. She plays Aurora, who is Sleeping Beauty in Maleficent. Are you familiar with Maleficent at all?
Nope.
Okay. Disney has a series of live action movies that are where the central characters are the villains from their animated movies. So there's Cruella, for example, who's Cruella de Vil from 101 Dalmatians. There's a movie about her. There's a movie called Maleficent, who is the villain from Sleeping Beauty. And in that movie, Elle Fanning played Sleeping Beauty. She also is maybe more famous, I guess, for the TV series The Great, which I believe is about, I don't know actually who, I don't know if it's based on a true story or not, but she plays Catherine. Yeah, Catherine the Great. Yeah, that was a real person, right?
Yes, they really existed.
Yes. So she plays Catherine the Great in the Hulu series The Great. So, so she's had a pretty substantial career, but. And is in the midst of kind of a hot moment because she's got The Great simultaneously kind of with this.
Right. Well, I'm very interested to see what's going to happen in next week's episode titled, do you know the title of it, Mr. Sal?
Yes, I do.
Seven Mercies.
Seven Mercies.
I think I could come up with a better title.
I haven't even seen it yet. By the way, I do want to mention too, Andrew Scott, who plays Tom, like, we should talk about what we know him from, too.
I'm a big fan of the BBC Sherlock, which Moriarty. So, there's my boy.
Yep. And he's also in an episode of Black Mirror. He's the central character in Smithereens. So, if you've seen that episode of Black Mirror, he is the guy in the car, the driver.
Anything else you know him from, particularly?
That's all I know him from.
All right. Well, listeners, I would recommend... you have Black Mirror in the back catalog, so check that out.
Not that episode, though.
Not that one, though, so don't look at that one. Well, I mean, I can't tell you what to or what not to watch, but I'm going to tell you not to watch that one and to watch one that we have covered.
Maybe we'll cover it someday. I don't know.
Don't watch it until we do.
Okay. There you go.
But in either case, I mean, that's what we're looking for next week. I'm curious to see how it's going to go. There's so many ways this series could go, right? It's only episode one out of how many total episodes are there? Is it eight?
Eight, yes.
Okay. So yeah, that's only one of eight episodes and he's made his plan together. I imagine it's not going to take him most of the season to become Dickie, but I wonder what the, what he's going to have to do to become Dickie, what the consequences are, what he'll do once he feels he properly is Dickie, like, especially if this guy's a monster in some way. I don't know. I'm very hooked.
Yeah, good. That's awesome. Okay. You know, I'll say this too. This episode puts us about 12% of the way through, maybe 12.5% of the way through the series right now, because there are eight episodes, right? In the book, I'm about 18.5% of the way through the book by the end of this episode. So I will tell you, there are five books in the series. I don't know what their plan is here. I don't know if this season is only intended to cover the first book, which is all the movie did, by the way. I don't know if they intend to cover more than the first book with the series. I don't know if they intend to make more seasons, because they certainly could make more seasons. It does say that this is a limited series, and on IMDb, this is listed from 2024 to 2024. So I don't think they intend to do more, but they certainly could if they wanted to.
Having never read the books, I wonder if they're going to do some sort of weird mishmash of the books. So they'll kind of
they might
go through two of them, or like do two books but take like element or elements of the third. Not sure. I'm not sure either. But
yeah, so far it looks like the pace they're on kind of sets them up to just finish the first book.
Looks like
I would guess.
Looks like that. Well, I'm excited. You're, I think, excited.
I am excited, yeah.
And I can tell, because we can feel your heart rate, listener, that you are excited. It's creepy now.
Yeah, it is.
For next week's episode.
Tom Ripley levels of creepy.
No, he doesn't say creepy things. He just does creepy things. So, thank you so much for listening. I mean, we'll be back next week with episode 2. But in the meantime, you can email us, showuperspodcast@gmail.com. We have an extensive back catalog. We've already cited quite a few episodes. I mean, just to throw a few more out there. We've done all of Ozark. We've done the first two seasons of White Lotus. We've done the first season of The Old Man. Outer Range is coming out soon, so we'll be getting right into that. Severance, we have that ongoing. So check that out. That will also have a season 2. We did Shrinking season 1 before. That will have a season 2. We just finished up The Regime. That's probably all said and done. But hey, we just covered it. It's on Max. Give it a look-sees. And thank you for listening. Share the podcast. Subscribe. Give us a review. We really do appreciate it. Thank you so much. And we will see you next week for episode 2, Seven Mercies.
Shoe hammer some show hoppers into your day.